Does this begin with simply turning voting into an electronic process, allowing people to start voting online? And why is that such a difficult thing to get past?
It's true. It's interesting. In my book begins with a meeting I had with the former president of Estonia, and I was trying to impress him with our Wi-Fi initiatives in San Francisco and talking about Twitter and all these things. And he looked at me cross-eyed and literally said, "You got to be kidding me." He says, "We've been paying our parking tickets and parking meters online for a decade. We've also been voting online. They don't do it exclusively, but they supplement their voting online. And they skipped a whole generation. You know, they came out of the Soviet Union in 1991, so they didn't have to deal with all the old technology. In America, we're stuck with all this old legacy technology, and we haven't been able to leapfrog that. We're still sort of being held back. So the point is, there's a remarkable amount of happening as it relates to online registration. There's certainly examples and pilots of online voting. The issue of security and making sure it's not hacked remains the biggest impediment to scaling that idea.
So what are some ways we can begin to chip away at this huge information gap?
Well, you know, a couple things have occurred to me. The technology does, if nothing else, it amplifies voices. It democratizes voices. Social media provides for a participatory power that didn't exist in the past. And I imagine I could speak for probably almost everyone, regardless of political stripes or geography. None of us necessarily like being treated as subjects. We want to be treated as citizens. We don't like when government does things to us. We want government to do things with us. And so if you can twin the two, this notion of no longer this inert citizenship, but active participatory citizenship, and use these tools of technology that are becoming more ubiquitous and more accessible to more people every single day, we can do something remarkable, and that's once again re-engage in a two-way conversation with our taxpayers and citizens.
Do you think that technology and the explosion of everybody having a voice has made us a more polarized or a more unified society?
Well, you know, it's the loudest voices that are still dominant. And I think what we have to reconcile, it's this whole notion of the King of the Hill model that, you know, people are ballot stuffing in terms of petition sites, and that's why we have petition sites for Death Star or, you know, to get rid of a talk show host because we disagree with them on gun control policy. But what I'm arguing for is not just a voice saying, government, go do this, but this old Jeffersonian model of self-government, where we actually are asking government for the tools to begin to solve problems ourselves. And I say this from a very progressive frame as a former mayor of San Francisco, of course, lieutenant governor of a very democratic state, California. We've got to ask more active engagement from our citizens. And I think people want to solve problems for themselves. They don't want necessarily someone else doing everything for them all the time. And I think technology can become a platform of sorts to provide for that kind of engagement.
If you had your way and you could make this happen, give me the first thing that you would do to implement technology into the role of government.
Well, I think the most important thing is exposing data. You know, we have all these data sets, all this data that's out there, and it's time for us to be more open and transparent, just as Ronald Reagan, interestingly, was in the 1980s when he put that satellite data, which used to be just in the hands of a select few, a government agency known as NOAA, the Oceanic Atmospheric Association. We kept that data ourselves. The Reagan administration opened that data up to the private sector, and as a consequence, we have GPS. And all of us are beneficiaries of that. We have AccuWeather. We're able to figure out just on our iPhones or our Android platforms what the weather will look like next week. And so this whole idea of openness and transparency is a fundamental core construct, and it's the most important thing we can do as government leaders, because the more open you are, the more transparent you are, you more likely we can build trust with citizens in a time where we don't really trust politicians.
But on this issue of transparency, how far are you really willing to go on this? I mean, do you think we should see all of President Obama's emails? Should all of his phone calls be recorded?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a great question. And that's usually the frame, right? Because it's that sort of Freedom of Information Act frame with government where it's usually about the politician's schedule, who are you meeting with, you know, how much money did you get in the campaign from that constituent, and is that what they're doing? Are they buying access? What I'm talking about is something more profound than that. As important as those things are, and to shed light on, you know, access logs to the White House and to to know what the president's schedule is, et cetera. All that may be important. But what I'm arguing for is, what's your Recreation and Parks Department have in terms of information that it could put online and make available to the private sector? Transit information, crime information, more substantive transparency than just the elected officials, but just decades, if not centuries, of data that has been collected and is sitting there in vaults that could be exposed to the light of day and could be mashed up by private sector folks that can use that data in a way that Ronald Reagan's era did as it relates to GPS technology to radically alter our experience and our lives.
Give me an example of something you did as mayor in the most technologically savvy city in the country that's an example of what you're talking about right now.
You know, we began with doing an open data initiative where I asked all of my departments to put together what we called these data sets online. Our transit agency, our public transit agency, was the first to do it. And within literally days, I'm not exaggerating, all these new apps, just like we go on our Android or iPhones, where there's 800,000 plus apps, we did an app store for San Francisco by putting these data sets up. The same third-party developers that are designing apps for entertainment, Angry Birds, and all these things we use and enjoy, started taking that information, crime maps, and putting these up for free. What would have cost taxpayers literally, in our case, millions of dollars and years of procurement were done in days, if not weeks,